Welcome to Words of Grace, radio ministry of Elder Ben Winslet, pastor of the Flint River Primitive Baptist Church near Huntsville, Alabama. We invite you to stay tuned to today's broadcast.
Our broadcast today is entitled Jesus Encounters Legalism, and we'll be directing you primarily to the book of Luke chapter 6. Now, as we turn to the book of Luke chapter 6 and prepare to speak to you a little bit today about the subject of legalism and legalists, it probably would be a good idea to define what that word actually means. What are we talking about when we speak about a legalist? Well, in one context, the word legalist would have reference to someone who just had respect for the law, any law. You could say that it's the responsibility of the Supreme Court of the United States to be legalists because their job is to rigidly interpret and apply the law of this land as it has been legally and lawfully passed, legislated as it were, and signed in by the executive branch. It's the job of the Supreme Court, or really any judge, to be a legalist and to apply the law as it is intended. That's how countries work. That's how this social contract that you find in any country is maintained. Respect for the rule of law is something that most certainly ought to be a part of the general culture of the judicial system. But when we're referring to religion, and I think we're all familiar with this concept, we probably all have a working knowledge of this. A legalist is someone that, number one, believes that they are saved by adhering to laws or teachings or commandments. And as a byproduct of that, generally speaking, a legalist is someone who is often very, very judgmental of others because, after all, if I am doing things that are right and righteous and I'm earning my way to heaven by the things that I do, and I look at you and you appear to be less holy than I perceive myself to be, I'm going to be judgmental of you and I'm going to be critical of you. I'm going to say things to you that are perhaps demeaning. I'm going to, as it were, look down my nose at you. So that would be what Jesus is going to encounter, that type of person in the book of Luke chapter 6. And there are a couple of examples of this working itself out. The disciples are going to get themselves something to eat on the Sabbath day in chapter 6 verses 1 through 5. And then Jesus is going to heal a person in a synagogue in verses 6 through 11. And as Jesus does this, as his disciples do these things, as these stories play out in real time, as you see in verse 11, these Pharisees, who very much were legalists, they were filled with madness and communed with one another what they might do to Jesus. Probably one of the most famous examples of a person being a legalist is the Pharisee who stood in the temple thanking God that he was more holy as other men because of all of the things that he does, and then at the end of that prayer, thanking God that he's not as sinful as the publican. And I'm sure we're all familiar with that story, but as the Pharisee is praying within himself and thanking God that he is so much holier than other people, there is another individual, this publican, who is smiting himself on the breast and saying, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And of those two men, the publican who says, God, have mercy on me, a sinner, went to his house justified. And that Pharisee, who was so smug and so self-righteous, so legalistic, he did not go to his own home. He did not return to his house justified. So that would be a good example for you to think about. Which type of person am I? Am I like the Pharisee that's judgmental, or am I like the publican who says, God, have mercy on me, a sinner? Here in Luke chapter 6, after these encounters with legalists, as I'll share with you in just a moment, Jesus preaches the Sermon on the Plain, and one of the things that Jesus actually says is, be ye therefore merciful as your Father also is merciful, judge not, that ye be not judged. Condemn not, and ye shall not be condemned. Forgive, and ye shall be forgiven. Now, there are obviously times when we need to employ discernment in our lives. We have to judge if a thing is worth doing or not. Good judgment keeps us from walking out in the middle of the street and being hit by a car. We have to have discernment. Should I save this money or spend it? Do I go into debt to replace a car, or do I have to fix the old car because it's cheaper to keep it running than to replace it and buy something new and nice and more reliable? Judgment is a part of everyday life, and we have to have discernment. We have to have judgment. And there are times that we have to say that behavior is not acceptable, that behavior is inappropriate. But what Jesus is talking about here is really the sort of judgy behavior that the Pharisees were so commonly guilty of, the sort of judgmental attitude that they displayed earlier in the chapter, the sort of judgmental attitude that Pharisee had in the temple when he said, God, I thank you that I'm not as other men, especially like this publican over here. All the while, that publican was actually feeling the blessings of the Holy Spirit in his life. He went down to his house justified. He had assurance of salvation, and God was pleased with the publican, whereas God was displeased with the Pharisee. Now, that is something that completely escapes us so often in our own experience. As we see someone who is very pietistic and very judgy, a lot of times we look at them and think, well, they're holier than me. They're a person who is closer to God than me. They do more than me, and I feel inferior around them. They make me to feel as if I'm not good enough because I'm more sinful than they are. But those are the people that God was the most critical to, that Christ was the most critical to in his personal ministry. Sometimes things are not as they seem. Things are not always as they appear to be. And certainly that's the case as it relates to legalists and legalism, things such as that. So let's look at these two stories that set up Jesus' teaching here, the Sermon on the Plain, in which he says to not be judgmental people, to not go around being, as it were, Pharisees. In verses 1 through 5, it came to pass on the second Sabbath after the first that he went through cornfields, and his disciples plucked the ears of corn and did eat, rubbing them in their hands. Now, what's taking place here? It's the second Sabbath after the first. Some translations say another Sabbath, but quite literally the word is second Sabbath after the first. So this is the second Sabbath after a previously mentioned Sabbath. And he went through the cornfields, and the disciples pluck ears of corn. Now, the disciples were hungry. So often they've been following Jesus for days and days, and they run out of food individually and collectively. And they begin to be hungry, and at times Jesus would multiply fishes and loaves to feed them, and sometimes they would disperse and go to their own places and find sustenance. Here, they're passing through what the King James Bible calls cornfields, and just a little bit of a note on that. When this translation was translated, when it was produced, the word corn had reference to any cereal grain. You might wonder, why are they plucking corn and then rubbing it in their hands? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Well, this more likely had reference to something like grain or barley. They would pluck the head of that off, and they would begin to rub it between their hands to open it up and to separate the chaff from the grains. And then, as you know, they would blow on it, and that would scatter the chaff, and the more dense, heavier grain would remain in their hands. Well, there's a problem. It's the Sabbath day, as you just read, and the Pharisees saw them and said, why do you do that which is not lawful to do on the Sabbath days? The Pharisees see Jesus' disciples pulling the grain off of these plants and rubbing them between their hands, and then criticize Jesus' disciples for breaking the Sabbath. And by extension of that, they're criticizing Jesus. This is something they would do in the previous chapter, as they criticized Jesus for eating and drinking with sinners. They would criticize Jesus because his disciples didn't fast like John the Baptist's disciples fast. Not that they respected John the Baptist either. quite the contrary, but they use anything and everything that they can to criticize Jesus. And that's generally the behavior of a Pharisee and the behavior of a legalist. Well, these Pharisees ask, why are your disciples breaking the law, breaking the Sabbath, violating the Sabbath by picking this food and meshing it up, as it were, between their hands and eating the grain? Now, those of us that just watched children open candy wrappers at Halloween, did it look like a whole lot of work when those children were opening candy wrappers? No, not at all. That's the equivalent, as far as labor is concerned, with what these people were doing. They're not engaging in difficult labor. They're also not working to earn a living. They're simply trying to eat. And as they are here at this field, they pluck, they thresh it a little bit, and then they eat it. And it's simply a way to maintain their strength and maintain their health. The actual law that they were citing and taking beyond what God intended to criticize Jesus was Exodus chapter 20 in the Ten Commandments, the law of the Sabbath. And what you read here in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 8, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath day of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt do no work. Thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son, thy daughter, thy manservant, thy maidservant, thy cattle, the stranger that is within the gates. So that particular day of the week, they were not to do any work. Well, the Pharisees see Jesus' disciples eating, effectively, and they say the process that you had to go through to eat, where you break the corn open, the wheat or the barley, as it were. Remember, that word corn in that day had reference to cereal grains, so wheat or barley, something like that. They see them opening it up, and they say, you are breaking the Sabbath. Now, Jesus is going to reply in a couple of interesting ways. First of all, he's going to appeal to what David did when David was hungry and got the consecrated showbread from a priest. He eats it himself, and then he gives the rest to those men that were with him. And so he says, have you not read so much as this, what David did when himself was a hungered, and they which were with him, how he went to the house of God and did take and eat the showbread, and gave also to them which were with him, which is not lawful to eat, but for the priests alone? That showbread was only for the priests, but because, number one, David was hungry, and he had a need, he was doing God's bidding, and two, his men were consecrated. They had not defiled themselves with women, to be very specific, from what you read. The actual passage is in 1 Samuel. Because they were consecrated, the priest says, well, you can have some of this bread. Now, there's an underlying principle here. God values, God places priority on the needs of human beings. God is not pleased when people are starving. Now, you see this all through the Old Testament. Even this example may be such a fulfillment as that. Have you ever wondered whose grain field are they walking through? Who owns this field? They start pulling the heads of the grain off and eating it, but this belongs to someone. Well, in the Old Testament, God actually said, when you plant your field, you're going to plant it. You are going to till it up before you plant it. You might fertilize it. They would use dung as fertilizer in that day. You're going to keep the weeds out of it, but you are not allowed to harvest the corners of your field. And if you drop some of your product on the ground, you're not allowed to pick it back up. And if you leave a sheaf in the field, you're not allowed to go back out there and get it if you forgot it, because it now belongs to the poor. And of course, a very famous example of that was Boaz leaving handfuls of purpose for Ruth in the Old Testament. God took such priority for the poor and the stranger that they were to be provided for through unharvested corners and that which fell on the ground. God cares for the poor. The poor have a very special place in the biblical narrative, though they are overlooked by the world. In fact, God's people are called a poor and afflicted people that are left in the midst of Him. So perhaps they're even eating this because God had given provision for the poor. God takes great care of the poor. He provides for the poor in His providence and in His commands. It was such an offense to him that the fatherless and widows were not cared for, that because Israel had ignored them, their children would be fatherless and their wives would be widowed. That's how serious of a matter it is to care for the poor. And as I remind you from the book of James, pure religion and undefiled is to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction and to keep himself unspotted from the world. So why it was okay for David to do that is because God places priority on the needs of human beings, even though that bread was legally the priest. The priest made the judgment call. They were consecrated. He gives them the food, and it's okay because caring for another human is always a good thing to do. And that's actually going to come into the next example that we look at from the book of Luke chapter 6. Now, first Jesus appeals to David, how he ate, and it wasn't lawful. They're not out there picking this grain in Jesus' day, working hard. They're just picking it off a plant, rubbing it, and eating it. They're hungry, and it's sustaining them. Then Jesus appeals to his supreme authority. He says unto them, "The Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath." Now, he doesn't say the Son of Man is Lord on the Sabbath. That's also true. But the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath, meaning, I am Lord, Jesus would say. I am God incarnate. I made the laws about the Sabbath. I know how I intended them. I know how to apply them. And you are going beyond what I commanded. You are valuing adherence to the law and your own pietism, your own legalism and your self-righteousness above the needs of other people. And that is wrong. And so Jesus says, I am the Lord of the Sabbath. And if I say it's not a violation of the law, now remember, Jesus never violated the law. He kept it to a jot and a tittle. But if he says it's not a violation to pick a piece of grain, open it up and eat it on the Sabbath day, it's not a violation. That means that's not how I intended the law. And so he appeals to his supreme authority in that passage after appealing to the example of David in the Old Testament as an exception to a rule because of the needs of others. Now, the next example. It came to pass on another Sabbath that he entered into the synagogue and taught, and there was a man whose right hand was withered. We don't know why the man's hand was withered in this passage, but his hand was withered. Maybe it was a birth defect. Maybe he had injured his hand in some way. Maybe an animal had stepped on it. Maybe it got caught in some sort of primitive machinery. Maybe it had been broken and it was left in that condition because of the lackings of the medical field at the time. We really don't know. But his right hand was withered. And the scribes and Pharisees watched him, whether he would heal on the Sabbath day, that they might find an accusation against him. Now, here's something that legalists always do. They're always watching so they can find fault with another person. That's their MO. Legalists enjoy finding fault with other people. They receive some sort of validation from that, true, but they also find this sort of, to put it in modern psychological terms, some dopamine rush. They find some sort of a thrill in being judgy to other people. And that's a terrible thing. It's not the way we're supposed to be. It's wrong, but that's the way that they behave themselves. So they're watching Jesus. They want to catch him doing something that they can use against him. And they see this man with the withered limb, and they're thinking, I bet Jesus is going to heal this guy. Now imagine being so hard of heart that you're waiting for someone who's never done anything wrong to help someone so you can criticize them for helping. What a carnal and wicked mentality these Pharisees have. But the scribes and Pharisees are watching him to see whether or not he's going to heal this man on the Sabbath, that they might find accusation against him. But here's the thing about Jesus. Look at verse 8. He knew their thoughts, and he said to the man which had the withered hand, "Rise up and stand forth in the midst." And he arose and stood forth. Jesus does this to show them who's boss, as it were, to put them in their place, to show that he will not be controlled. and again, to show the value of human life and to teach that it is always a good time to do good. If there's one point that I want you to get out of today's broadcast, it's always good to do good. You say, well, it's the Sabbath. We shouldn't be out healing people. Well, no, healing people is good. So regardless of the day of the week, you should do that. People are hungry. Well, we don't need to feed them because we've got more important religious things to do than feeding people. Well, no, it's always good to feed people. Now, I would encourage you to wait till after church on Sunday morning if you really wanted to feed somebody, but it's always good to help somebody and to feed somebody. Those are needs. And if a person can't feed themselves unless they're just lazy, and we know that if a man won't work, he shouldn't eat, but it's always good to feed people. So Jesus is going to challenge them, as it were. He knows what they're thinking. He's the discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. And he tells this man, stand up, rise up and stand forth in the midst. Come here in the midst of the synagogue and stand in front of everybody. I'm going to heal you in front of all of these people who are around here. Jesus asks them, I will ask you one thing. Is it lawful on the Sabbath days to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy it? And looking round about them all, he said unto the man, stretch forth thine hand. And he did so, and his hand was restored whole as the other. Jesus says, is it not good to do good on the Sabbath day? Yes, when God gave a day of rest, that's not saying that you are not allowed to do good on this day. If there was a day that doing good should have been taking place on, it would have been the Sabbath day. This is the day that's consecrated. This is a day that's holy. This is a day that's sanctified. Certainly, they need to be doing good on the day that God gave to do good, to rest, to think of Him. And how much more can we show that we're reflecting on God and His Word on a specific day of the week than to be doing things that please Him? They totally missed the point of the Sabbath day. And beyond that, the Sabbath was made for man and not for God. And Jesus is God incarnate. This would happen, this point would be made elsewhere in Jesus' ministry, that look, I am divine, I am the Lord, and the Sabbath was made for humans. It was not made for God. God doesn't need to rest every seventh day as if the universe doesn't get upheld by the word of His power. God is a God of providence on the Sabbath day of the Old Testament, like He is today. Now, a note on that. In the Old Testament, you had the Saturday Sabbath, and it was the seventh day of the week, and that very much was the Sabbath. Jesus fulfills the law. He takes away the first that He might establish the second, as Hebrews says. The law was a schoolmaster to bring us to Christ, and there are things that we learn about Christ in the Sabbath. Jesus even fulfilled the very Sabbath itself, because on that seventh day of the week, where was He after His crucifixion? Well, He was resting in the ground, as it were, and He rose again on the first day of the week. Christians worship on the first day of the week because that is the weekly anniversary of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, and it's the day that He most commonly appeared to the disciples after His resurrection. You see that the disciples are meeting in the book of Acts on the first day of the week. Again, Paul references their gatherings together on the first day of the week to the Corinthians. So historically, that's exactly why Christians worship on Sunday, the first day of the week, instead of the seventh day Sabbath of the Old Testament. That's why we meet on the first day of the week. And in the book of Revelation chapter 1, we actually find this term, the Lord's Day. That's likely a reference to the first day of the week, the Lord's Day, the day that Jesus rose from the dead. Even the week is pointing to the coming of Christ, because every eighth day is a new week. And as you see in the resurrection of Jesus, it is a new era. It is a new time. It is the first day of the week, the day that Jesus rose from the dead. So we worship today in the New Testament on the first day of the week and not the seventh day, the last day of the week. But these men are criticizing Jesus because He is doing things that are good on the Sabbath. Now, their response to Him, and this is so telling, They were filled with madness and communed with one another what they might do to Jesus. From this point on, they conspire all through his life to put him to death. They're not so brave as to just come out with it, right? No, it's one of these background gossip chains. It's kind of like they're wanting to punish him and shadow ban him, and it's very secretive. They're gossiping, they're conspiring, but none of them are just going to come out and say, "Jesus, we don't like him. We don't like what he's doing. We want all of you people to stop following him." They are not brave enough to do that. And so what they do, they work in the background, they conspire, they're filled with madness, they're angry, and they're crazy, and they plot against Jesus to take his life. Now, I want to remind you of what Jesus said in Luke chapter 6, to not be judgy, to not be judgmental. And I want you to remember as well the two men who went into the temple to pray. Do we find ourselves being more like the Pharisee who says, "God, I thank you that I'm not sinful like all these other people"? Or do we find ourselves being more like the publican who says, "God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I am a sinful man. Lord, please be merciful unto me"? Perhaps some other takeaways that would be worth mentioning to you today. What was the Sabbath for? It was for rest in God, and that is exactly what the gospel is to do for us today. Another takeaway, human needs are a priority to God more than we sometimes realize. As you saw with the example of David and the showbread and the disciples plucking grain on the Sabbath day. Central to the gospel are themes like mercy, grace, and forgiveness. And you also have fruit of the Spirit like long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, meekness. If my religious experience, listen carefully, is steering me in the direction of being judgmental rather than being gracious and merciful and forgiving, long-suffering, gentle, meek, etc., then I am out of the way. I'm no longer following Jesus, but I'm acting more like his adversaries. And then lastly, our final takeaway for today, obedience to God is crucial. We are to be concerned with obedience, but we're to be preoccupied with our own obedience as it relates to others. Rather than being judgmental, may we be ministering. A sinful person is a sick person, and those that are sick need a physician and not a magistrate. Again, I'm Ben Winslet, thanking you for listening to Words of Grace today, inviting you to write and let me know that you've received today's broadcast, and also to tune in again next week at this time. Until then, may the Lord's richest blessings be yours, is my prayer.
If you enjoy the messages you hear on Words of Grace, consider this your invitation to visit a Primitive Baptist church in your community. An online directory is available at marchtozion.com. Copies of this and other broadcasts are available for download on iTunes and on our website. And finally, Words of Grace is a listener-supported program. To contact us, address your correspondence to Words of Grace Radio, 641 Moontown Road, Brownsboro, Alabama, 35741, or visit us online at flintriverpbc.org.